Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
And joining us today for the first part of the show is Kate Webb. She's the Statewide Prevention and Fire Communications Coordinator for the Utah Division of Forestry, Fire, and State Lands. And she's here to talk about all things wildfire. Kate, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So let's start with this. What has, you know, it's been a dry year. How has the fire season looked so far?
Yeah, fire season this year has been much busier than normal. We had a very hot and dry spring, and those hot and dry conditions have persisted into the summer months and where we're at now. So it's been a very active wildfire season. We've also seen an all-time high of human-caused wildfires this year. So firefighters have been very busy statewide.
So give us a sense of like what those numbers actually look like. You know, when we say it's a lot higher, there have been, you know, quite a few fires. How many? What are the numbers?
We ran the numbers on July 12th. So obviously, in light of especially the number of starts we had yesterday, they're a little outdated. But just to give you a rough estimate, this year so far, we've had over 698 wildfire starts across the state. Interagency-wide. 561 of those have been human-caused, so 81%.
So those numbers, I read kind of the previous version of those, and they were shocking to me. I had no idea that we were talking about this in, you know, in the hundreds. I assumed maybe it was more like the dozens. And also, I think it's important to note how many are human caused. So let's talk about both what the causes are. Let's start with those that are not human caused. Like, what are the natural causes of those other 100 and some fires?
Yeah, so when we're talking about natural causes, we're referring to a lightning start or something of that sort, which doesn't have any involvement with a human, or there wasn't any sort of human cause involved in the ignition of that fire.
Okay, and so lightning is the most common then in that category?
Yep, absolutely.
Is there anything else that nature can do to cause a fire?
You know, there may be, but lightning is what we often see most common source of those natural cause lightning fires, the overwhelming cause that we have here in Utah.
Okay.
All right.
Now, let's turn to us humans. How many different ways can we start a fire?
Too many ways. Too many ways. So, you know, this year we have had, as I mentioned, an all-time high of those human-caused fires. Our highest causes here in Utah have ranged. We've had a number of vehicle-related starts. Hmm. We've had a number of target shooting-related starts, fireworks, campfires, and debris burning, so private controlled burns that have escaped. Those are our primary, highest, most common causes statewide for Utah.
So let's take some time to actually go through those so that, you know, we don't inadvertently start a fire in one of these ways. What is a vehicle-related start? Is this like a, you know, you drive your truck over some dry grass and there's a spark? Like, how does this work?
Yeah, that's one of the ways. So we can start with that. When conditions have been as dry as they are this year, vegetation is very dry and very susceptible to ignition. So something as simple as a hot undercarriage of a vehicle or an exhaust pipe, parking or driving over dry vegetation can ignite a wildfire. A couple other ways we see vehicles starting wildfires are dragging chains or other dragging parts on a vehicle. So if something isn't well maintained or you haven't tightened the chains properly when you're towing a trailer, that dragging piece can spark on the pavement and start a wildfire. Same train of thought for, say, a tire that's blown on the highway. If someone continues to drive with just the rim exposed, that can cause sparks and also ignite a fire. So there's a few different ways that a vehicle could be the start of a wildfire.
Yeah, the toll gate fire that occurred in Summit County a couple years ago was chain related. Eventually, it was determined that a truck, a landscaping vehicle or so, dragging a chain. And that's, Kate, that is literally just sparks. That's not a flame. You know, the obvious ones, campfires and things like that, or exhaust pipes, hot sources. A spark.
A single spark.
Spark from a dragging chain is enough to start a fire.
Right. That's such a crucial note to emphasize because it does not take much. And it seems so simple, but honestly, all it takes is one small spark in the right place under the right weather conditions, and that wildfire can grow very quickly, especially with the red flag warnings that we have seen a lot this year already and are in place in a number of areas throughout the state today. We're in those prime conditions for that small, seemingly harmless spark to start a wildfire.
And guns at target ranges, that's the same thing. They're just ricocheting and creating spark.
Correct. Yep.
Okay.
And are these like, you know, fires started by the vehicles or target shooting? Do those tend to be ones that are self-reported? Like somebody says, you know, I was target shooting and there was a spark and now there's a fire. Or is it kind of like it takes a while to build up into a big enough fire that anybody notices? And then the next person to the scene is calling in to report this.
It really varies. Sometimes people on the highway may be driving and not even notice that they've sparked something behind them, and other vehicles traveling that same route will notice it after the fact. It's the same for target shooting. Often we have people self-report. There are also incidents where we don't have a self-report and it's somebody else in the area who does let us know. So it's not always as obvious as that one spark just exploding into a large fire immediately. It can take a little bit for that spark to kind of move around and gain momentum.
So the another one that you had mentioned, a common start for fires, is very relevant during the month of July. So let's talk about fireworks. How many fires do fireworks tend to start on an average year? And what has this year looked like so far?
You know, it varies on an average year. So this year so far, if we take a look back around the holiday weekend, we had 18 fires started by fireworks over that 4th of July holiday weekend. So a really high number. We also had on either end of that holiday weekend, we had incidents where fires were started by fireworks when they were illegal. So the important thing to remember about fireworks here in Utah, they are not allowed anywhere statewide except for those three specific sets of dates, the July 2nd through 5th, July 22nd through 25th, and then December 31st through January 1st. Even within those legal dates, it's really important to remember that there are a number of areas throughout the state that don't allow fireworks. For example, federal and public lands, you can never use fireworks. And even within those dates, in areas where you're allowed to have fireworks, it may not be smart to set them off given weather conditions, especially on a year like this. With any dry vegetation nearby, it's probably not worth the risk of using a firework and potentially starting a wildfire. We did have evacuations as a result of a fire started by fireworks, the Traverse Fire. And there were numerous firefighters, first responders, and public put at risk because of that careless act. So fireworks is something that's very important for the public to be aware of, especially, as you mentioned, this month.
Let's talk a little more about that Traverse Fire. How big was it?
Yeah, so the Traverse Fire got to a couple hundred acres, and they were able to contain it with no structures lost, which was incredible. Firefighters did excellent work on that. They were challenged by winds, but again, there were numerous evacuations, and crews and first responders were working on that incident over the whole night.
And that was firework related. So a single one or two firework, you know, maybe landed in a grass or brush, and within a matter of a minute, off it went. And was this during the day or evening? I want people to understand how this unfolds.
Yeah, that's an important point to make. So I think sometimes people assume that wildfire risk only happens during the day when the sun's out, and that's not accurate. Hmm. The Traverse Fire was reported and was incredibly active all night. Hmm. So it was reported late. I believe it was around 11:30 or a little bit later at night, and that fire burned all the way until the next morning. So we have had such dry conditions this year and hot weather in Utah statewide. Fiery weather conditions paired with the fire danger that we have based on our vegetation dryness, it's very crucial this year that people are keeping fire prevention in the forefront of their minds.
Another commonly caused, or I guess human cause of these fires is campfires, which you mentioned. How prevalent is this as a start of a fire, of a wildfire?
It is a prevalent start for us here in Utah. And this year we have seen a higher number of abandoned campfires and a number of campfires that have started wildfires, just kind of in correlation with the increase of people out recreating this year. So oftentimes it's not so much a campfire that's burning that people are sitting around that starts a wildfire. It's generally the campfire that is not fully and properly extinguished. People walk away from it. It continues to smolder, creeps its way out of the fire ring or wherever it was, and then moves into the wildland area.
We're speaking with Kate Webb. She's the statewide prevention and fire communications coordinator with the Utah Division of Forestry, Fire, and State Lands. And of course, we're talking about wildfires. It's wildfire season here in Utah. Remind us again, Kate, what is the formal date calendar for wildfire season?
The formal season here in Utah extends from June to October, but it varies based on weather conditions that we're having and have had. So it will extend or start earlier depending on the year.
Okay, well, let's talk about some existing fires going on right now, because we actually had a few start up yesterday, a couple down in the St. George area.
Yeah, so we had a number of starts yesterday, five of which did not stay small. They grew. We could start with those fires down near St. George.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is the Veo West fire, and that is 1,100 acres. There were evacuations in place for the west side of Veo and Brookside. Those have been lifted. There's still no containment on the fire right now, though, and there is a Type 3 incident management team in command of that fire.
What does that mean? Type 3? Sounds serious.
So we categorize all of our wildfires based on their complexity. So the least complex being a Type 5, most complex being a Type 1. So a Type 1 would be those large campaign fires with thousands of resources assigned, thousands of acres burned, and then the Type 5 would be, say, a single lightning-struck tree. So this incident is a Type 3, and we determine who needs to manage it just based on the complexity. So this one with evacuations, fire weather conditions, and the fast growth, we decided to escalate that complexity. So it's being managed by a Type 3 incident team right now.
What's the largest one we've had so far?
The largest fire that we've had this year was the Canal Fire, and that one went up to a Type 2.
And where was that?
That fire was near Oak City, and it's now contained. It was recently contained. That one grew to 78,000 acres. So that was the largest wildfire we've had to date this year.
Wow, 78,000, rough math, that's about 110, 120 square miles. That's like an area that's 10 by 12 miles. That's a pretty sizable area, but it was fairly remote?
It was fairly remote. There's a couple communities nearby, Oak City, Leamington. They did experience evacuations when the fire was very active over the first few days. And it's in a very remote area. That fire was fueled primarily by winds, especially during the first few operational shifts that it grew significant amount. There's also a large number of fine fuels that we have, a larger than normal crop in Utah based on the wetter year we had last year. So those excess fuels, which are very dry right now, paired with the winds, is what really drove that fire to the size that it is now.
Last few more minutes, firefighting equipment and methodologies and technology. Is there anything new in the way of fighting fires with different types of retardant or different types of methods or different types of aircraft, et cetera?
I would say that the fire suppression and wildland fire management is a constantly evolving organization, interagency-wide. So we are constantly looking for equipment or ways of doing business that improve the safety for our personnel and the public and also improve our success rate out in the field. So, you know, we do have new equipment adjustments to what we've used in the past. We have new technology that's increasing and always getting better when it comes to mapping. We have started over the past few years to utilize, for example, drones more often to help with some remote mapping if we can't get aircraft up, or to get eyes on a piece of the fire that we don't feel comfortable having resources walk into. So yes, we are constantly on the lookout for and implementing new and improved ways of fighting wildland fire.
As we look at what seems to be an increasing risk of wildfire, what are some of the, you know, maybe underlying causes that are making us so susceptible to this risk?
Yeah, so there's a few. You know, there is a pretty significant increase across, you know, the whole state of wildland-urban interface. So people moving into areas that are right up against wildland, which increases the risk of impact by a wildfire to their home and those communities. We also, for a long time, suppressed a lot of wildfires, and that did increase vegetation or slightly change the ecosystem in some areas throughout the state as well. And we're also seeing, you know, this year, for example, we're seeing very hot and dry conditions, and that changes the vegetation and the conditions in which we're fighting wildfires.
I know that just kind of maybe as a local data point, here in Park City, Summit County, on the Swanner Preserve, we looked at a soil core, and we looked at the particles in that. And what the scientists found was that as far as fire goes, it looked like there was a, you know, a small to moderately sized fire in the vicinity, you know, right around the preserve, maybe every 20 years or so. So relatively frequently. And then you'd see a bigger fire, you know, maybe every couple hundred years. But there was a fire, you know, that area burned relatively frequently. And that's something that obviously we've suppressed to keep our, you know, human communities safe. But it's interesting to think about how different that might have been here.
Absolutely. And what you're kind of talking about is that natural fire return interval. One way we talk about it, there are a lot of vegetation types in the West, particularly, that are not only fire adapted, but fire dependent. So fire is a natural part of the life cycle in that ecosystem and has a number of benefits if it's the correct intensity and the correct interval when it's passing in and out. So yeah, often it's something that isn't recognized, or it's something that we had kind of forgotten for a while there with all the suppression. But wildland management agencies are moving into introducing safe intensity fire and the appropriate intensity and the right vegetation type. And we are working to reintroduce fire onto the landscape in a number of areas, not just in Utah, to get a little bit closer to that more natural state.
Well, that's exciting. And that sounds like a great topic for next time. I think we could talk about that for quite a while, to hear how we can kind of help return to that natural, the natural fire return interval.
Yeah, we would have 80% fewer fires.
Right.
If we had no humans.
We know that as well.
Maybe that's part of our...
We didn't have human fires.
Kate, I'll say this. Maybe that's part of our suppression policy going forward. But it's true. I mean, 80% of all the fires, of the hundreds of fires that happened in this state so far that you have documented. Remember, this is what you've documented, because there may be fires that start on somebody's property by burning trash or fireworks, but they put them out. Luckily, they put them out. But this is hundreds of fires that your team, your department has responded to, or fire departments respond to. 80% of them set by humans in one form or another. And Nell and I had to look at each other. Right now, we're on a full-on no fireworks ban, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
No fireworks anywhere, anytime, any part of the state.
And for good reason. Yet, starting on July 22nd through July 25th, we're going to magically allow people to set off fireworks. And not magically. We're just going to let people use fireworks. And I'll be the old man get off my lawn, you know, role in this one. I don't get it. And I think anybody that does use fireworks is being irresponsible, period. So even during the 22nd through the 25th.
Right.
So.
It doesn't mean there's lower risk.
No.
It just means the rules have changed.
Unless it's raining.
Right. Let's hope. Let's hope.
Sorry, Kate. You always walk in. Our guests always seem to walk in with a bit of op-ed moment. But
No, you're fine. No need to apologize.
So, but that's the situation. But the takeaway here is we are in a very high risk, bright red situation right now.
Red flag warning.
Red flag, right? Kate?
Yes, there are a number of red flags throughout the state, but fire conditions in general statewide, we have high fire danger, very high fire potential.
That's that, and that's the most important piece of news that we should take away from this and continue to. And where do people go to track all this on the website?
We have a pretty comprehensive website, utahfireinfo.gov. We have all of the active wildfires on a map listed with their latest acreage, containment, and any other important notes all on that website. That's also where any fire restrictions and firework restrictions can be found. There's a map for both of those as well for a visual, and then also all of the official orders are listed on there as well. So that's really comprehensive information. Additionally, as far as new incidents go and ongoing fires, following Utah Wildfire on Twitter is the best way to get the most accurate, updated information. We are constantly updating about all of the recent incidents and any new information that needs to be shared.
Well, fantastic. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us today and talk about our fire season and give us some guidance as to how to bring that number down.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate you highlighting the topic. It's so crucial this year.
Well, we'll loop back with you in a couple months to get another round of numbers and stories.
Absolutely.
All please right. do. Yeah, I would be more than happy.
Okay.
That was Kate Webb, the Statewide Prevention and Fire Communications Coordinator with the Utah Division of Forestry, Fire, and State Lands.